to Kyoto, Japan. You're going to see a ton of people around me here because this is the start of the new year. I'm filming this on, I believe it's January the 3rd. And it's a tradition amongst Japanese to go to temples during around the turn of the year to celebrate the new year. Now, it's a country holiday. Shops and restaurants, all kinds of things have been closed for the last couple of days. And so behind me is one of the many temples in Kyoto. This is the Hakanji Temple, if I remember correctly. Now, we're staying in an Airbnb near here, and it's just so charming to see all the temples and see all the country turn out and the families and all that touring the area. Kyoto's a gorgeous city, very old, historic, total contrast to Osaka, which I was just in last week, just gorgeous. And we're spending about a week here. You'll also probably see a lot of women in kimonos. It's very popular here to rent kimonos and get your hair all done and dressed up and go around and take historic-looking pictures at the various temples. Tons of kimono rental shops around here. It's really cute to see just all these women, moving around, taking tiny little steps because the dresses are so tight, taking tiny little steps and getting their pictures taken. It's adorable. So let's go through your top voted questions from Poll Gab. Hanny asks, well, let me get it, let me click and come on now. Bookmarks. Come back over here. So there we go. Hanny asks, "Hi Brent, have you ever seen table partitioning cross the finish line for a database performance problem?" Yes. He says, if no, then what could be the best use case that suits partitioning? You know, I say a lot on this channel that you don't want to reach into the toolbox, bring me a tool, and say, "Hey Brent, what's this tool for?" Then go back and get another tool and say, "Hey Brent, what's this tool for?" Instead, describe the problem that you're having, and then let's go from there. Otherwise, if you just want to like grab various tools and see what they fix, your best bet is to read the documentation, read the product documentation, and see what examples they use, and then start there. Ask yourself if you're having any of those problems. So hope that's fair. DBA in the Mirror asks, "What problem does database mirroring solve that availability groups without clusters do not?" Oh, that's a great question. Because at first glance, the two things seem to be very similar as you go through and read the documentation and whatnot. But what database mirroring solves is simplicity. When you're dealing with a low-staffed environment, people who may not have, or companies who may not have full-time database administrators, they don't want to deal with the complexity of an availability group. They just want simple failover from one place to another. They don't want to deal with Windows. They don't want, or to specifically, they don't want to deal with things like security. Then database mirroring tends to be much easier to set up and manage than availability groups are. Next up, Gonna Be Golden asks, which I love that reference, "How many database administrators do you typically see at a shop when they're running availability groups? Can it be done with one database administrator?" You know, this is a really interesting question. A lot of features in SQL Server and availability groups and replication is another one that comes to mind, work really well in a stable environment. Not like yours, but you've heard of these, in a stable environment where things aren't changing. In a simple, stable environment where things don't change, they work fairly well. And you can even get by without a database administrator. But out here in the real world where stuff is changing all the time, people are rebooting domain controllers, people are taking down file share witnesses, people are adding and dropping databases, backups aren't working, so somebody screws around with something, somebody takes a replica offline to troubleshoot it, and then the log file fills up and grows. In real-world complex environments, the more complex the environment is and the more that things are changing, the more you're going to need staff time to troubleshoot when it does break. And I think that that's true for a lot of SQL Server features, but clustering, availability groups, and replication, anything that moves data from one place to the other, is extremely sensitive to that kind of thing. And then just the more complex it is, the more staff you're going to need. Next up, SQL Serenader says, is there any benefit to using distributed availability groups for disaster recovery over just adding an additional a third async node to an existing AG? The third node in either case would be in a different data center. Yeah, you know, it's funny. We seem to have a simplicity code today. The simpler that you can make the infrastructure, the easier your DR failover is going to be. This is especially true in disaster recovery, where when a real disaster strikes, you're going to want to fail over a lot of stuff, not just the SQL Server, but you're probably going to be failing over app servers, web servers, domain controllers. There's going to be all kinds of things that are going to be moving parts. So when you're planning for true disaster recovery, and you want to sketch out what does that disaster look like? What are the number of things that are going to be failing? In a true disaster recovery scenario, you want the simplest failovers possible so that you can fail over all kinds of stuff quickly with minimum staff, because you may not have all your staff ready to go during a failover. In that case, my personal preference is log shipping, because you don't have to worry about trying to force a cluster online. You don't want to have to worry about things like complex domain name resolutions. That's my personal preference for true disaster recovery. There you go. Next up, Accidental DBA says, what causes SQL to hold a buffer latch? I'm working with my developers to fix a query that causes a buffer latch on one table and holds until we restart an instance. If the query holds a latch until the instance restarts, one of two things is happening. Either the query is frozen for some reason, or you've hit a bug. My money's actually on the latter, because you also say SQL Server 2019. I bet you're not patched. The first thing that I would do is get on the most current cumulative update and go from there. After you're on the most current cumulative update, that problem may resolve itself. Then the other thing that I would want to do is troubleshoot the query, because it seems like a query that's frozen, maybe it's waiting on a lock on something else, but there's nothing really that's in a query that's going to cause that query to hold a buffer latch until SQL Server restarts. That doesn't make sense, because if you kill the query, then the latch should no longer be needed. So that's what makes me think that it's a bug that you've hit in SQL Server, and I'd start with patching first. Dopinder asks, do you like any of the AI engines for decoding the SQL Server XML deadlock graph and making remediation recommendations? No, because that's not how I solve deadlocks. I don't solve deadlocks by reading the deadlock graph. I use SPBlitzLock, and I use the... To learn more about what I use, go to brennozar.com, click training up at the top, and there's a totally free training package. Start there, and in the free training package, I cover how I use SPBlitzLock to handle deadlock problems. Go from there. It's going to be so much easier, more intuitive, more fun than trying to deal with deadlock graphs. I hate deadlock graphs. My Robot Overlord asks, my company announced that during some AI training that during the next 12 months, we won't be writing any of our own code. Instead, we're just going to be babysitting agents. What's your opinion on this? And I says I'd personally be surprised. This was such a good question that I ended up writing a whole blog post about it. So keep your eye on brentozar.com. Click on blog up at the top. You can also subscribe to the blog to get email updates whenever I post a new post. And I've written a whole, I think it was like 1,000-word blog post about that. Including with examples from other industries. But really good question. I felt it deserved like 1,000 words to answer there. Let's see, we'll do, how long we've been going? Oh, about 10 minutes now. Let's see here. Brave Sir Robin says, what's your opinion of the open source SQL monitoring system, SQL Watch? because of the number of monitoring tools out there, I just can't stay current on all of them. So I don't have an opinion on it. I don't. Generally speaking, what I'd say is, make a list of like five reasons that you would have wanted a monitoring tool to alert you. For example, maybe look at like your most recent help desk tickets. Maybe a drive filled up. Maybe you had a blocking chain. Maybe an instance stopped and wouldn't restart. Make a list of your five most recent help desk tickets. And then in a development environment, simulate those scenarios and see how easy it is for you to solve that scenario using that particular monitoring tool. That'll help you understand what that monitoring tool looks like under common situations that you hit. And you'll usually find that some monitoring tools are easier for you to understand than others. Some monitoring tools just have really pretty dashboards, but it's hard to understand what's actually going on during your common emergencies, whatever those are. Let's see here. DBA Greg asks, we have a stored proc that runs 6 to 8 times per minute, so like every 10 seconds. We're getting compile waits resulting in rolling blocking for 10 seconds to 2 minutes in duration. How can I find the root cause about why the SP is getting recompile waits? Oh, that's really interesting. What I would bet is that I bet it's due to stats changing on the underlying objects. There are two things that can happen. Either it's got a plan in memory and that plan is no longer valid, and that's what changing stats would cause. So I would look at the underlying tables, and I'll give you an example from a client. I had a client who had a queue table, and the queue table was constantly getting inserts and then getting deletes back out of it whenever the rows were done processing. Inserts, deletes, inserts, deletes. So they would constantly have stats updates on this table. And I said, does the data distribution ever really change? Does it really change on that table? Why not just turn off automatic stats updates? Get a good set of stats in there and then just turn off automatic stats updates on that table, and that solved that particular problem because then they just didn't need to wait for constant recompiles on that. That's one example of where you might have constant recompiles due to stats changing. Another example would be, what if the plan is disappearing from memory? Run SP Blitz. SP Blitz is going to warn you, and SP Blitz cache does this as well. If you have hardly any plan cache history, like if your SQL Server's memory is churning over so bad that you can't keep execution plans in cache, if that's what's causing it, and probably the fastest way to do it is run SP Blitz cache and look for priority one warnings. If you see any priority one warnings, read those URLs. And in that case, if your plan cache is rolling over within seconds, then you want to fix that root cause because it's going to have all kinds of interesting cascading performance effects for you as well. All right, that's a good batch of questions for the morning. I am now going to go back to the Airbnb and go shower. These are actually yesterday's clothes. So I have this thing where I don't want to take a shower first thing in the morning. I usually want to have coffee, and I'll come back to this in a second. I usually want to have coffee, let that take its natural process, and then take a shower after that. So my coffee, yes, this is coffee from a can. And if you're from America, you would assume that this is a cold can, but you would not have experienced the magic that is Japanese vending machines. There are so many vending machines in Japan for all kinds of things, but one of them is canned drinks. And it has, whenever you're standing at the vending machine looking, there will be lights that say whether this can is hot or cold. So this, for example, is a hot can of espresso. Now, it's a little tricky because it's not directly espresso. There's a lot of sugar in here. It's really more like a Cuban coffee. But these things are fantastic. They're really good. but also loaded with sugar, so they're fairly unhealthy. You can get cans of soup, you can get ramen, you can get pizza, all kinds of stuff out of Japan's vending machines. It's absolutely fantastic. So in a moment here, I will have finished this. I will go make my way down to my Airbnb, take my shower, and then we're going to go wander around. It's a beautiful sunny day today, nice for photography, wandering around through temples. And then I will see you on the next Office Hours, which will likely be in Tokyo. See you then.